Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Mike, we got more time behind us than in front. I'm gonna be running down criminals till I'm 100. You're dying your goatee.
What?
Yeah, that's Midnight Cocoa Bean.
Oh, hell no.
Marcus, somebody's trying to kill me.
I'm not letting you go alone.
One last time.
One last time.
We fly together, we die together.
What?
Oh no.
That's just something we say.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Williams.
What? Wow, we're just laughing at my name now with nothing added on.
I was going to say something, but I just didn't want to. Anything I would have said probably wouldn't have been okay.
Yeah, I was kind of trying to guess. Where's he going with this? Will Smith and getting jiggy with it?
We got a great show in store for you as we're going to be talking about Bad Boys for Life. So we're excited to talk about it. We just got out of the theater to see it. And, you know, we're kind of at odds about this, in all honesty.
Yes, this is going to be interesting.
It is. So stick around as we dive into that.
Tune in each Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosopher and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We're all over them socials, so check us out. Drop us a line. Let us know what you're up to, what movies you're watching. We'd love to hear from you. But in terms of today, we are actually talking about a movie that, in all honesty, both of us are actually kind of at odds. Oddly enough, because I don't think we're really ever at odds, but...
Yeah. I can't really think of too many movies where we're on opposite sides of a table about it.
But we are today, so we are talking about Bad Boys for Life. So this is the film that actually caps off, well, God willing, caps off this film franchise.
Oh, it doesn't though, because did you see that thing where they...
We'll get there. So before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them that official synopsis goodness?
The Bad Boys take one more wild ride as Miami PD and its elite ammo team attempt to take down Armando Armas, head of a drug cartel. Armando is a cold-blooded killer with a vicious, taunting nature. He is committed to the work of the cartel and is dispatched by his mother to kill several government officials, and last on his list is Mike.
Yep. Directed by Adil L. Arbi and Bilal Fallah, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, the film sees the return of Will Smith and Martin Lawrence alongside performers Vanessa Hudgens, Alexander Ludwig, Charles Melton, Paola Nunez, Kate Del Castillo, Nicky Jam, and Joe Pantoliano. This film was actually first announced back in 2013, and this is actually the first Bad Boys film not to be directed by Michael Boom Boom Bay. However, he does have a cameo in the film. He's actually an MC at a wedding, so that's actually pretty interesting. And oddly enough, I have to say, this is probably going to be the only time you really hear it out of me, but the film does feel like a Michael Bay film in all good and bad senses of the way, and I'll get into those. But yeah, it's interesting to see that this was the one that he didn't produce, however, or direct. However, he is listed as supposedly directing or producing the next one. So, who knows? A couple of the numbers. The budget on this film was around $90 million, and the domestic box office weekend actually rounded out at $62.1 million. So, there was a lot of people who wanted to see this movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, whatever. But if if you include Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday as well as part of that weekend, it actually rounds out about to $73.4 million. So an additional about $11 million on top of that rounds out the whole weekend of the entirety. So, but like we said, this is a movie that honestly we were both surprised to find each of us on the other side of this conversation, like of the table. Because in all honesty, you hadn't seen this movie or any of these movies up until this past weekend.
Nope, we watched it all on Sunday.
So here's the story, and hopefully this song dies down because I get tired of hearing the song. This movie was a movie that started out during the 90s, and the first film obviously was way back in the mid 90s, back in 95.
Right.
And then the second one came around in 2003. But having to sit through both of these movies reminds me as to why the 90s is not as like nostalgic to many people as like the 80s. Because like the 90s was just trying to make everything out of the 80s polished and nice, it felt like. I don't know. I just, there's a lot that was going on in that first movie. And the second one. But we actually sat through both of these movies. Spencer had to sit down and watch back to back, which these movies are, it's not any easy feat. Like the first one
is 1 hour and 59 minutes, and the second one is 2 hours and 27 minutes, I believe.
The man was keeping track.
No, I looked both up the run times on Sunday.
You were right on the first one, 1 hour and 59 minutes, almost 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then Bad Boys 2 was 2 hours and 27 minutes.
What did I say? I thought I said it's 2 hours and 27 minutes.
I'm just reiterating what it says here.
Oh,
I don't,
okay.
You know, if that's what you said, then, you know, bully on you.
Yeah.
But
great on not listening to the only other person on this podcast.
You know, I do. Yeah, I do try. Thank you. So this movie, the third one, was a very interesting development to happen. Now, mind you, like we said, it was announced back in 2013. And I'm going to be very honest with you. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan of this franchise. Like, it's got its moments, and it's probably some of the better work from Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this was one of those franchises that was kind of like, well, it was good at first, amusing at the second time around, and is a complete, like, crapshoot on the third time around. Like, you don't know what you're going to get. And it was really interesting to me that after we got out of the theater, you were actually on a higher, like, range of, like, emotion of actually liking the film more so than I was.
Yeah.
So, knowing all this, we're going to go into this film, and we're going to try to avoid major spoilers, but there are going to be little bits and pieces. This isn't going to be a spoiler review. We're not going to give away a lot of the bigger stuff, because there's certainly some things in here that really give the whole plot away. So, just so you know, this is a non-spoiler review. We'll make sure it's notated in the title and everything. But expectations. So, after seeing those first two films, and we had mentioned it to producer Corey right before we walked in here, I hadn't realized how bad 90s movies really were until you see one again. And you're like, I liked this as a kid. I remember watching this on the TV or watching this on like one of those Fox Saturday afternoon movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't I don't remember a lot of it. But for some reason, it just like oozes with that mindset of like, this is old. Like, this just feels old. Like, I could watch Goonies. I could watch certain horror movies from the 80s. There are certain films that age really well.
Yeah.
This did not age well. And I'm not upset at all about my mindsets about these films. So coming into this, and I had told you, I said the one thing that I was expecting out of this film was a unique and probably original take on the dynamic of these two people in this universe, like in this franchise, an original story, something that we hadn't seen, and it's not out of the realm of possibilities. It's definitely something that's feasible, but that was the only thing I was taking into. I didn't want to see, like, I wasn't worried about seeing like Martin Lawrence jumping over cars or doing whatever, because he's up there in them years. And yes, Gemini Man just came out the other day, and Will Smith did a bunch of stuff in there, and so I know Will Smith is active. However, I'm not really expecting Will Smith to be like insanely all over the place in this film. So that was my biggest expectation, to be frank. Like, that was it. Just give me a good movie with a solid storyline and something that I can actually come home, like, take home with and be like, all right, like, I'll give this movie that grace and I'll give it that chance and we'll see what happens.
Huh, okay.
So what about you?
I thought this movie was going to be garbage before I saw it. Like, just because that's such a long time to go without a sequel from, what was it, 2003 or so?
Yeah, 2003.
Yeah.
So that's what, 16 years?
Yeah. Like, there's not many movies that can pull off a good sequel after such a long break. So I wasn't really expecting much. I was expecting to be disappointed, actually. That's truthfully how I felt. Like, I was expecting to be like, we can use whatever from the 90s and make money again because we're Hollywood and we are out of ideas. That's what this
felt. What are you, 1940s pitchmen or something? Put it in print. We got to get it to the... Find Ray Pictures of Spider-Man. Like,
yeah. No, that's basically how I felt about going into this movie.
Okay, all right. So obviously, like we said, we saw the film. Leaving the film, I have to say, there has to be, like, somebody has to be in charge of, like, quality control. Like, in terms of, like, when it comes to certain films, there has to be, like, an expiration date on certain expectations for films. Like, if you're going to go and, like, all right, we're going to do another, you know, I don't know. What would be an interesting film franchise that's, you know, like, okay, perfect example. We're going to do another Fast and the Furious movie, and this time they're going to race spaceships. And like.
I'm just waiting for that to happen. I'm waiting for a clip to pop up on YouTube of that.
But, like, why? Like, it doesn't make any sense, and it's just a cash grab. Like, there has to be somebody to police Hollywood or anybody to keep them from making garbage that people are ultimately going to go and pay money to see. Because it's like, you know, seeing a car accident. You can't help but look, but you know you're staring, you know, and it's like you're watching it the whole way through. People are going to pay to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say all that to say, I feel like this didn't do anything that was new for me. Like, I felt like I've seen these gags already. And here's the thing, not so much in action movies altogether, but more so like 90s action movies. Like, this was a poor love letter to the 90s action movie formula. And I was like, this couldn't have been written better by Trump himself. Like, I felt like this movie was just very beneath the bar that Michael Bay had set for me. Now, here's the other side of the spectrum, because you disagree with me very much so.
Yes, I would put the writing above a Trump tweet. Yes, that's almost laughably easy to say. I don't know how to even respond to that, really. But yeah, I came out of this movie and I was like, oh, this movie is not bad. There was effort. Like, legitimately, I was going into this thing and there was not going to be, like, a single thing of effort. Like, everyone's just kind of phoning it in and whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I kind of walked away from this movie feeling like, you know, they tried to put in, like, you know, something to get, like, at least they didn't. I could tell, like, you know, it was a cash grab, but someone wanted to be a cash grab with effort. That's the best way.
This is a cash grab with dignity, sir.
Yeah, I feel like that's actually the best way to describe this movie. A cash grab with a little bit of effort.
See, I don't know if I agree with that, because it's like, I get it. There was work to be had.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Lawrence, I'm pretty sure, was sore at the end of every day of shooting.
They just had him in,
like,
that
poor
chair.
Guy. Just, I felt for him. Like, I felt like what he was wanting to do in the movie and just retire and everything, that's what he really wanted to do. Like, we haven't seen Martin Lawrence in anything as of late. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's still funny. I mean, Martin Lawrence is still a funny guy.
Yeah.
He's got jokes. I'm pretty sure he ad-libbed some of the stuff he said in this movie.
Yeah, he did.
And he's a very comedic actor. He's a funny comedian. He's essentially a comedian. However, putting him in some of the situations that they were in, it kind of bears on the same like mindset and wavelength of like things like how many Taken movies are there? And the last Taken movie where like Liam Neeson is like having to do 12 takes on him just climbing a fence. Like how many times do we need to see fence climbing? You know, like,
well, apparently the answer is 12.
Apparently there shouldn't have been more than one. Like I feel like, okay, Taken 3. There you go. Like that one is one of those ones where it's like, there's no reason why we need to see that many takes. We get it. Liam Neeson needed help to get over the fence. We got that. But why really emphasize this one time where he does it on himself, does it on his own, and makes it over the fence? Like, there's got to be a limit. I get that there's a sense of disbelief in a lot of these movies. However, this movie, these types of movies have like some, like the toe of it dipped in a sense of reality because it's based in the real world. Obviously, cops do not operate like that.
Oh, no.
Like the whole opening sequence was like, where are they going? What's going on? And it's like they literally have torn through the entire town driving at 100 and something miles an hour with the entire police force behind them, thinking they're all trying to get to like this shootout or this whatever, because it uses this whole sense of misdirection in the beginning. And all it was they were trying to clear the way so that Martin Lawrence's character, Marcus, could get to the hospital because his daughter was having a baby. And it's like, I don't know. I think this movie relied a lot on the misdirection of a lot of things. Like, oh, we're actually chasing, it looks like we're chasing after this speedboat going down the Gulf, and we're going to chase after it. Psych! Martin Lawrence is now pop. Like, I don't.
What jabroni are you voicing? What?
I don't know. It's just like, it's one of those situations where, yes, there were quality scenes peppered very sparsely throughout this movie. But as a whole, it feels like it just falls completely flat to me. So before I go into more of that, obviously, talking about some of the cast and characters, Will Smith reprises his role as Detective Mike Lowry. Martin Lawrence reprises his role as Detective Marcus Burnett. Who else? And then we had the return of Joe Pantoliano, who played the captain in the last two films. He's in this film as well. He reprises his role as Captain Howard, as literally all those people that just return. What's his name? There was a guy from the second film. He was actually supposed to reprise his role, and he didn't end up reprising his role. So it was whatever. And then you had a whole slew of other people, like Vanessa Hudgens. She plays a police officer who's a member of an elite group called AMMO. Alexander Ludwig, if you don't remember him, he played Cato from the Hunger Games movie, the second one, I believe. He's another member of the team. Paula Nunez, she plays Rita. She's actually the leader of AMMO, the superhero cop squad. And then you have Kate Del Castillo, where she's had more of a history in novelas, you know, Spanish soap operas, for those who don't know, than anything else. So it's interesting. She's actually in one of my favorite films. It's a really big trip, but it's called La Misma Luna, Under the Same Moon. But it's a very unique and interesting tale. It came out back in 2007. I actually really like it. But she plays this kingpin's wife who breaks out of prison. Mind you, very elaborately. I have to admit, that was a very Silence of the Lambs thing for them to do. How she gets out of jail.
Yeah.
And that's, mind you, this is all still just at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think with bringing back people like Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, having them actually play their original selves, that was a good step. So first off, that's the first good step they did. Having like if they had gone the route of like, all right, we're going to reboot the whole thing. We're totally, we're going to RoboCop this thing. We're going to totally change everything. You know, that probably would have been a bad, bad thing. But the fact is that they brought them back. So that was great. But I think as this film progressed, I think what I was waiting for that never really happened was a push to like pass the baton, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I felt like this movie just really wanted to perpetuate that Will Smith and Martin Lawrence still very much got it, when in fact, they really don't very much got it. And I think this film teeters on making that known, but then it completely does like a 180 and they're like doing crazy stuff throughout the whole film.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. What is it about the film that you actually found that made it cohesive for you? Because for me, this is a hot mess of a movie. Like, everything from the CGI to the movements of these individuals, the Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, like, you can tell it's not them running or it's not them doing any of these other things. Like, or they're not really in a motorcycle. They're not really in this. Like, they're in front of a green screen. They're doing this. They're doing that. Which it's funny that you mentioned the other day about Kung Fury, and we went and saw this movie and I'm like, oh my God, this looks just like Kung Fury. Like in terms of the way the backdrop and everything is going, this is not good. So I need to know, like, what is it about this film franchise that you actually found appealing and cohesive?
Okay. Well, we're just talking about this film because if not, I would go off about Taya Leone from movie one.
hold on. Time out. Side note. So when we saw the first and second film, Spencer was literally up in arms because we saw the first film and then we saw the second one and he goes, the second one was so much better because it didn't have Taya Leone.
She's the worst in the first movie. Like, I'm not joking when I tell you this. I woke up this morning and I was like, okay, we're talking about Bad Boys. And I literally could not remember what the first movie was about. I had to look up like what it was. And then I saw Taya Leone's face. And I was like, oh gosh, right. She was in that. Like, my brain just like pushed her and the movie out. I couldn't handle it.
So she was pretty bad. She plays herself really well, which she's not a bad actress. She just does what she does really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that is being the complainer, the person with issues of the group or of the film. And she really wound that up really tight in that film. So,
like, if that's what you want, then that's what you got. But that is just annoying as a concept. But whatever. I'm not in Hollywood.
So, Bad Boys for Life. What is it about this film? Like, what was the thing for you that really tied it so well? Like, what about this film that made it a winner for you?
I think it really comes down to two things. Like, for me, I thought the movie was just kind of fun. Like, yes, there are some ridiculous things, and if we're being real honest, mm-hmm. there are some things they really shouldn't have done and dropped.
There's a lot of things they shouldn't have done.
There's a few. Like, especially with the whole Bad Boys singing thing. Is there a contract somewhere that says they must end the movie with them singing the theme and Martin Lawrence can't know what the words to the theme are?
See, that's what I'm talking about. It's the same running gag from the 90s and the 2000s. It's like, we get it. You don't know the words. I understand that. Why are you still hammering that in? Like, it makes...
That's something we're on the same page about. Like, because that could have... Like, he could have at least learned the words. It's been 20 years. but other than that, actually, a lot of it has to do with Martin Lawrence's performance throughout this movie. Like, I found his character kind of compelling with...
Who, Martin Lawrence or Will Smith?
I said Martin Lawrence.
Okay.
Again, not listening to the other person on the podcast.
I'm making sure because I think out of the two, I think Will Smith, his character, had a more compelling storyline than I think Martin Lawrence did. Like, I'm opposite of you on that as well because it's like, I think Martin Lawrence is just, honestly, okay, nobody kill me for saying this, but I think Martin Lawrence is done.
Yeah,
like, no, he is. I think he's completely done with filming, like with acting. I think he'd be a great writer. I think he'd be a hilarious, like, show writer, or, you know, maybe he'll do, like, some spinoff of, you know, Martin with his son doing, I don't know, something ridiculous. I don't know. Anyway, but I don't think Martin Lawrence was good at all in this one. I felt like he was reading from cue cards the majority of the time in this film. I didn't like his performance at all.
Oh, okay.
Like, and if we're talking about any kind of emotionality in this movie, I would have to give the little bit of what Will Smith does, because that's what Will Smith does. He brings the emotion into any movie. It doesn't even have to be an emotional movie. It could be something like this, and all Will Smith has to do is start doing that choke up and his, you know, the tears well, and you're like, okay, Will Smith, I believe you. It's like 7 pounds all over again. I ain't doing that. No. That movie had me in pieces. So it's interesting that you say that, because I don't believe that he was the more emotional and engaging character. Why do you say Martin Lawrence was?
Well, because he had several moments where, like, you know,
what? You literally started, and all I could think about is, I'm trying to penetrate his heart with my soul, or his soul with my heart, or whatever. I'm like, that is the dumbest line.
That was the line Martin Lawrence said.
And he's trying, they're trying to get a, they're trying to come across to this coked out accountant.
Yeah, it was a bad idea.
And Martin Lawrence is like, I ain't gonna do no violence. No, I'm gonna try to penetrate his soul with my heart. And it's like, I thought we were done with, like, the Hare Krishna stuff, and those people are like, I don't know. That
I think that's actually part of the reason why I liked him so much in this movie.
Because he was so full of it? What? Just,
it seemed like... kind of, yeah, actually. Because, like, I don't know, like, in other movies, it seems like, you know, I must take a vow to not, like, harm people. But, like, 5 minutes later, that's kind of over with. But, like, in this movie, it was 20 minutes later, and it was kind of over with. Like, he actually tried to go through with it. I don't know. I guess that just kind of struck a chord with me, because I didn't really expect that either. I expected to be like, I'm not trying to hurt people. Then 5 minutes later, it's like, you know, he's blowing up a school bus that's full of terrorists or something.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what they do. Like, have you seen the last two movies?
Yeah, no, I've seen them.
Like, that whole opening sequence has them going down a freeway with... In part two, there's that whole sequence where they're going down the freeway and they're literally getting cars hurled at them from this semi truck,
yeah,
causing destruction and mayhem. So I don't know. Like I think Martin Lawrence was good for some of the comedic breaks in the film, which, mind you, this is where I think it deviated from the Michael Bay formula.
Mm-hmm.
Which, now, I'll give you this. I have pooped on Michael Bay on this podcast for a good amount of time.
Yeah.
Because what he did to my Transformers is unforgivable.
Oh, gosh.
And we're not even going to talk about what he did to my Ninja Turtles. So, but there was a time when Michael Bay was creating some incredible movies and doing some unique stuff, because his stuff was fresh at the time. Like, everything from Bad Boys 1 all the way to, The Island, that was his, like, sweet spot time frame. And then after that, he decided, I need to make more money, and he started doing Transformers.
Again, so, those voices are crazy.
I know. So I have to say, like, I think the movies were good, not great. I'm not in love with them. They're okay. For what they are, like, the first film is a hot mess, but the second film had a lot of funny moments, had a lot more, like, consistency to it. I liked the storyline. I thought that the it was very typical for that early 2000s, late 90s kind of motif, like drug dealer going down, cops going undercover, doing their own thing. Like, the comedy was fresh at the time. This film had Martin Lawrence rehashing a lot of the same, like, comedic tropes that he had done already prior to this, in not just these movies, but things we'd seen in, like, Blue Streak, and, I mean, about just about every movie he had done, you know, from Big Mama's House, national security, nothing to lose. Like, he's done a lot of these types of roles already. And his comedy, the way he portrays his comedic way, is very recycled. Which, hey, probably why he worked with Michael Bay so well. I mean, Michael Bay recycles all his stuff. But I don't think, like, he did well enough to say in this film that I was like, all right, that was good on him. Because there was, like, certain scenes that seemed so wooden. Like, he was very, like, rigid. Like, it didn't seem like it was him acting. He was just reciting the line that I'm like, oh, man, come on. Like, I get it. You're getting paid, but come on, give us something good. Like, because it just felt like it was phoned in, you know? However, you believe he was the more... He connected with you more is what you're trying to say. Is that what I'm gathering?
Yeah.
Okay, because that makes a... Not really, but still. That's probably... That's probably where you're coming off as where this is at. And maybe I can agree with that. Maybe that's fine. Whatever. Like, here's the thing. I didn't think he was good. And that's the sad truth. Like, I think if anybody carried the emotional weight of this film, in all honesty, it had to have been between Will Smith and, for the time that he was on screen, Joe Pantoliano. Like, I think those two had more... of that emotional, I don't know. I like Joe Pantoliano. I think he's a funny actor. I still feel like in this role, he was still in it. Like he was.
Yeah,
like,
no, he's great in this movie. I liked him a lot.
I felt like he was still the same chief that we first ran into in the first film back in '95, and that's great because then it feels like you've seen this character grow. Like this is the point in their life where you're at.
Yeah, I think between Joe Pantoliano and Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, like, there's a disconnect in how the characters are. Because Joe did, feel like, just a fantastic job, while the other two weren't in, like, the same realm.
Yeah.
Because, like, it feels kind of like Will Smith and Martin Lawrence were on pause, like, in time from, like, you know, the two movies that we have that we've seen, and his character wasn't Joe. Like, like he lived during those in that period, but the other two didn't.
Yeah, and that's I think part of the whole, like, mind you, people age or whatever. Like, Joe Pantoliano was probably the most believable character in this film.
Yes, 100%.
And I think that's just the hard truth of the matter. Transitioning from, like, the performers, because, yes, there was a lot of unique performances. Did you know, and I didn't know this, and it took a little bit of research today, Rita, the character Rita, the one who heads up Ammo, did you know that she was a psychologist or a criminal psychologist?
She's a criminal psychologist.
Yeah, I was reading through some other stuff, and there was, like, some portion that was, like, someone did back, like, a year or two ago on, like, the plot, and they mentioned her as this criminal psychologist who help comes along or whatever, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, huh? But then it makes sense because there's a scene in the film where she comes by. So apparently her and Mike, Will Smith's character, have had a past. And so she comes by to see how he's doing, to check in on him. And they're talking and he goes, essentially something to the effect of, like, this is you, like, analyzing me or something, whatever. And it dawned to me, I'm like, because I was wondering, like, why is he saying that? And then I read this, I'm like, that was nowhere in the movie. Like, where was that plot point? I wanted to know why she went from being a criminal psychologist to being the lead of this, you know, tech savvy, you know, SWAT team. Like, where was that?
I don't know. Well, during that scene, I didn't really, like, take that to mean, like, you know, that she was a psychologist. I just was like, you know, she's trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with him. Like, that's how I took that.
I don't know. Like, I felt like had that been a factor in this film, had they actually utilized that, I think that would have gone really somewhere in terms of unique with the storyline. Like, if it was psychological, like criminal psychology.
There it is.
Would have played a factor. I felt like things would have gotten figured out a lot quicker in this movie than just like, and we're here. Yay. Like, I don't know. Like, that's part of like a lot of the little holes in the film that I'm just like, I don't really like. I don't really get it. But then I think it also kind of really also is impacted by the fact that this is another one of those franchises that for me personally, I think has gone past its prime. Like, mm-hmm. we are in an age where cash grab opportunities are falling from the sky.
They're everywhere.
Like, I would be completely like at ease and calm if somebody walked in here and said, hey, by the way, you know, they're making another Stuart Little movie. I'm like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, because people are wanting to make money off of just about anything. Like, I don't know. Like, hey, did you hear someone's making a sequel to the Ten Commandments? Like, I don't know. Like, someone, if people could, they would probably do that. And this is one of those instances where it's like, did we need a third Bad Boys movie? You know, and that's part of that question that I have, because like, for if you've been any longtime listener for the show, you know that right now I'm not the biggest fan of the Fast and the Furious franchise because of the fact that they keep making more movies. Like, just end it already. Like, just stop. And they don't want to. And mind you, we got a great spinoff.
Yeah, see, like, I've only seen Hobbs and Shaw, and I really like that movie.
And here's the thing. Here's the thing.
Okay, calm
this
down.
This is what I was telling you on the way over here. I was like, you know what I think the biggest issue is? You know what the reason why you probably like this movie and I don't? Is because I've had to endure that entire franchise from film one, and I'm talking about Fast and the Furious,
right,
from film one all the way through to film eight. And I was wishing the franchise had been done by film three. Like, it needed to be over with. How in God's green earth do you go from the first film, which is about an undercover LAPD officer who's trying to find this underground, trying to infiltrate into the underground street racing world because there are street racers who are hijacking semi-trucks and taking all of their high-end goods out of the trucks and pretty much robbing them. Like, and he gets embedded into them and falls in love with the main guy's sister, which happens to be Dominique Toretto, played by Vin Diesel, and X, Y, and Z happens, blah, blah, blah. That's the first film. The last movie, the last one, number eight, they're all international spies who work for a government person, a government representative or whoever, using all these gadgets and gizmos and electronic doohickeys, trying to take down a world-class mastermind, evil mastermind, who chases them down with a nuclear submarine in the frozen tundra of God knows where.
I really kind of want to see this.
That
movie
is literally the last movie that happened. How in the world do you go from LA, street racing, issues with relationships, undercover cop, to international espionage and like the matters of like saving the world? How does that come to play? That makes no sense. So this is one of those elements where I am frustrated because I've seen what continuous pushing of that boundary looks like without any regard to the intelligence of the viewers. And this is where I think this is going. And you, however, have not seen those movies, so you don't have anything to compare it to.
No, I don't have that to compare it to. But I am curious. Why? Okay. So you thought the movies, like the Fast and Furious franchise, should have done by movie three, right?
Yeah.
Why were you still watching around movie six, seven, and eight?
Do you not remember the car crash analogy I had said earlier? No matter what, even if a plane is on fire and it's burning in the middle of a field, you will still slow your car down to see, oh, hey, what's going on? Look at, you see what's going on?
Okay, but the main difference
or if you're Mexican, like, oye, mira, ¿qué pasó? ¿Qué estás haciendo? Like,
All right, the main difference is, you know, a plane crash is free to view, but you have to pay money for the movie.
Oh, you pay for it. You pay for a possibility you pay for it in the possibility of getting pulled over. But in this situation, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, I can't, as a responsible moviegoer,
mm-hmm.
and someone who is now more mindful of where my money goes when it comes to certain films, because let's be honest, people will pay to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
They will pay to continually see this movie just because they want to see the car burn. Like, they want to see that happen. People want to. And it's like, it's interesting because it's like trolls on the internet. Like, trolls become famous because people keep giving them that attention. Oh, so-and-so's a troll. Don't pay any attention to them. Oh, I'm going to like this and retweet it because, yeah, so-and-so's a troll. Don't listen to them. Oh, I'm going to like that and retweet it because... And by the end of it, this person has already like 20,000 followers because they said something, you know, that's anti what everyone else believes. And he's trying to get a rise of everybody. And he actually does. And he ends up becoming famous. There's literally, I don't remember her name offhand, but there's this woman on Twitter who literally just put out a tweet the other day. She's like one of the biggest trolls on the internet for like. She's a gun-toting woman, whatever. She's one of these people, whatever. But she just posted the other day. She's like, thanks to all the people who tried to ignore me or whatever, blah, blah, blah. All the attention you gave me allowed me to travel to all over the place and let me do the things that I want to do and I don't have to work anymore. And so it's all because of the people who said I was a troll and told people not to listen to me or whatever. It's like, dang, ain't that a shot to the old baby maker? Like, for real. It's like... There you go. So I think that's the case with this. Like, yeah, I'm gonna pay to see it because I have to report on it. We have to do this here. If we didn't have this show,
mm-hmm.
I would be a much more refined moviegoer in terms of like, nope, I'm not gonna go see Dora. Nope, I'm not gonna see Frozen 2.
Oh man.
Nope.
Why are you bringing up the
I don't need to see Sharknado 6.
Oh, no, you would have seen that anyway, because you're friends with me.
Yeah, you're right. You would have. But, like, all those movies that just really made it so difficult to sit through, it's like, I wouldn't have seen those movies. But mm-hmm. because we have this as a responsibility, and, mind you, it's an opportunity to speak on exactly what this is, that, you know what? We're giving money to this machine that's going to keep feeding us the same old thing. And as sad as it is, we're going to keep reporting on it, and like at least $12 on both of us are going to keep going to it in terms of continuously seeing this. But like, there are franchises out there that get the formula right, and there are franchises out there that really know how to bring it home. Take, for instance, we were just talking about it a little bit ago, the Rocky franchise. I'm a huge fan of the Rocky franchise. I absolutely love it. And they are still like, I'm still excited to see the next Rocky movie. You know, they've already done 6 Rocky movies and then 2 Creed movies, which is all still within the same universe, so it's still part of the same franchise. And they followed the formula. They allowed the viewers and the audience to grow up with the characters. And yes, some of the Rocky movies are a little bit more hokey than the other, like Rocky 6 or Rocky 5 compared to Rocky 4. You know, how his son went from looking at, like, at the age of 7 to, like, 15 overnight.
They grow up fast.
They grow up fast. Yeah. Drink your Ovaltine. But the franchise as a whole is beautiful, and it's wonderful, and it follows the story so eloquently.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely adore that franchise.
That's really good.
You know, you look at other franchises like we were talking about earlier, and I know your take on it, but I still think the Indiana Jones franchise is in an... It's in a... slightly okay place.
It's
like on extremely thin ice.
It hasn't crashed through.
No, because I it's gonna crash through when Harrison Ford completely removes himself from the project and they pick somebody ridiculous to replace him. That's when it's fully gonna crash through.
You mean what the last movie insinuated?
Which that's not gonna happen because of how many people have uproared and talked about it and have voiced their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
God willing. Now I'm rethinking my thoughts. But there's still several franchises out there that actually can get it right. And then there's some of those ones that just really need to stop. Like, for instance, the Men in Black trilogy. and I say trilogy because we're starting with a trilogy, ended that franchise so well. Like the third Men in Black film, I didn't know about it until a friend of mine had mentioned it. They were like, "Oh, have you not seen the third one?" I'm like, "Ah, I'm not really interested in seeing the third one." This was around the time when we were supposed to see Men in Black International. Mm. I'm like, I don't know. Like, well, you should really see it because it's actually really good. I'm like, well, I really like number one, and I don't know, like, just watch it. So I ended up renting it and I watched it. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, part three of that movie of that franchise is my favorite Men in Black
film. What?
Yeah.
No, okay, I haven't seen the third one because I just assumed.
It is so good.
Really?
Like, I'm so surprised at myself because I didn't like number two all that well.
Yeah.
Johnny Knoxville is really weird. I absolutely adore number one because it's kind of the liftoff for this entire franchise. Plus, all the opportunities to see the cartoon of it and all that based on the first one. But and so I didn't really think the third one was going to be that great. I thought it was just going to be some kind of cheap closing of the story. Part three rounds out the entire trilogy so well. Oh my gosh. They should have stopped there. And they didn't. They ended up going and making a Men in Black International, which was god awful. And we talked about it in on the show. I don't even know what episode that was. I wasn't prepared for that one. But like, we talked about it, about how like the episode of the film itself was nothing like the original film, like any of the original films, and it felt so phony and disconnected. Lesson 166. So sadly, it didn't get good marks from us. But it should have stopped with the third film, and that's where like people need to know when it comes to certain films, like filmmakers, don't subject your fans to things that are only going to have them turn into like haters of the franchise. Because I loved the Men in Black franchise before. Now I it's hard for me to get back into them because of this one that's marring the entire franchise, because it's there. It's just like the Indiana Jones franchise. You talk about the Indiana Jones franchise, but you can't talk about it without bringing up Shia LaBeouf swinging around with monkeys.
It's just so bad. Like, why? It wouldn't support his weight.
You've been thinking about this for a little bit, haven't you?
No, that's just what I remember being angry about.
So I think that's one of those areas where this film really should have stopped at two. And I think it should have just left it there. Because two ended really well. I think two is a great movie. In comparison to the whole three, I think two is a masterpiece. Like, two is the better of the three. Two was the better of the two back then.
Yeah.
And with this one, it's like there's a lot that goes on that it's like, I don't know. It's doing the most a little bit here. I don't know. And that's me by like 20-30 minutes in. I'm like, yeah, it's doing the most. And I'm like, yeah, this movie needs to end. And this movie's 2 hours and 4 minutes long, so yeah, you know, it was a little bit of a ride. The film depends way too much on the age factor of them. They're getting old, but it doesn't actually, it's not a factor of their ability in the film, which is really odd for me. And it creates this mindset of disbelief of like, well, you're stating that they're older and they're stating that they're this and that, but then they're still doing all these other things. So whoever's doing their stunt choreographies should be really getting paid overtime for a lot of this. There's a certain point with this film where it's just like, I didn't enjoy it, you know?
Is that why you felt like Martin Lawrence was stiff? Because he wasn't doing as much in this movie overall?
No, his acting was stiff. His whole act, the way he was performing was extremely stiff. Like, he seemed like he was looking over the cameraman's shoulder to see the cue cards that were on the side of the camera. Like, it seemed like that.
Okay.
Like, it seemed like he was extremely rusty.
So what I got from him is that, like, you know, his character is old and not as flexible as before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of just read that in, like, you know, that's part of the main reason why he's retiring is because he can't do what he used to before for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I read that.
Yeah, but then where's the passing of the baton? Like, where does it go from there?
Why
did
it have to pass a baton?
Because then where's is that then the implication that there's going to be more? Like, I don't want to see Martin Lawrence in a wheelchair doing this or in a walker. Like, I don't want to see him.
That's almost exactly what this is.
Yeah, which exactly what this film almost is. Like, I don't want to see anybody at that stage where they're being forced to perform a certain way because of the begging of the audiences that are out there. Like, oh, we need to see another Bad Boys movie. And, you know, Will Smith is already, like, older, and Martin Lawrence is like, this is what I had told you in the theater. Like, this film spends way so much time on the fact that these guys are older, and they do so many of those close-ups that you can tell visually these guys are older, and yet they still have, like, Will Smith perpetuating this, like, suave and cool and he, you know, this womanizing type, like this whole role, this whole aesthetic that he had created in the first two films. And Martin Lawrence as just kind of like that Costello to the Abbott, you know, routine here. Like, he's the shorter, funnier guy who just, you know, he's there for comedic relief. Like, and even then, some of his stuff was delivered so wooden that it's like, it seemed to fall flat for me.
Okay.
So, but kind of wrapping up this conversation, what were, I mean, because obviously you had a great time with this movie. Was there anything at all that really stuck out? What was the highlight of this movie?
A highlight?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's a tough question. What stuck out the most? The thing I want to say is kind of a major spoiler, so I don't want to say it. Because I was like, that's kind of unrealistic, but I don't want to get super into it. Because it's about the big twist at the end thing.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm like, no. No way.
Oh, okay.
But, like, that's the thing that just stuck out with me the most.
All right, well, that was anticlimactic. I think the biggest part that really stuck out to me in a bad way, because I have to say it was pretty bad, is that this film has an end credit scene. This end credit scene couldn't have been rewritten and put in a Marvel film and done any better, because it seemed like a complete ripoff to something Marvel would do. I feel like that was the icing on the poop cake here. Like, the rotten cherry at the top of this disgusting poop cake. Like, I didn't need that end credit scene. I don't know why it was there. And it's like, yeah, don't make any more movies, please. So,
no, I kind of saw that coming from, like, before I even entered
the
theater,
but, though. I was giving grace. I was having high expectations. I was hoping.
Again, I feel like that's what our main differences was, is that I was expecting just much worse and got slightly better and was happy about it. And you were expecting slightly better and got much worse and you were upset about it. And I feel like that's what our points really come down to, is our expectations going into this movie.
So what you're saying is you set the bar so low that even tiptoeing over it would have been a success.
Actually, kind of, yeah. Because, like, I thought they couldn't. Do anything better than just tiptoeing over the bar.
Here's the thing with you. And I think this is the raw truth of it
all. Here's your problem.
You are looking at this film as long as it doesn't have Tia Leone, this movie is a success. That is your measurement of success here. You are not even looking at anything else. You're like, you're watching for that white girl to pop out of any corner. Where's she at? Where's she at? Everybody's over here speaking Spanish like, all right, we're good. We got people of color. Nobody else is trying to. Okay, where are the women at? All right, Tia Leone? Nope, not on the credits. All right.
That's an interesting theory. I have no idea how I would have reacted if I saw Tia Leone in this movie. I would have been upset. Oh, you might be right.
Thank you. Thank
I don't know for a fact, but like, I know I would be upset if they.
here's a hypothetical then. Here's a hypothetical.
Okay. All right.
You've seen the whole movie.
Yeah.
Movie has been what it is. Mm-hmm. You're like, all right, great, whatever. Mid-credits end. Mid-credit scene comes up, and Will Smith does the whole like Samuel L. Jackson thing. It's like, I'm putting together a team. You want in? Like, that's not exactly what happens, but like, just from like the Iron Man movies. And Tia Leone comes out from the shadows and like, I'm in. And then it cuts to black.
Okay. I would be so angry. So angry. I'd be like, what do you mean you're bringing her back? You're having a Bad Boys 4 with Tia Leone? Oh, no. I would be furious.
Well, Kung Fury, as we wrap up this film and this conversation, let's go ahead and go across the table. We'll start with you. Does the film pass or fail? Does this film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
Now I'm really worried that that was my only criteria. Oh, no.
I was saving that in my back pocket for this entire conversation. I was going to lay it on like that Uno reverse card, like, no, you, and boom, drop it on the table. It's like that draw four with a... In a two-person Uno game, the draw four.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So this movie passes for me. Apparently, it's because Tia Leone's not in it.
Apparently.
No, I had fun. Like, yeah, yes. I realize that this is just them going after a franchise that should have been just dead. But I wasn't bored throughout the entire movie. And that alone is kind of a triumph in a way. So I'm going to give this movie like three monocles out of five.
You're going to give it 3 out of 5?
Yes.
All right. Well, this film, for me, I'm going to have to say that it does not pass because although it has a lot of great comedic moments that are very few and very far between, the sum of the whole parts is not equal to what I would feel is a successful film. And on that note, in terms of monocles, I'm going to give it a 1 monocle. Now, that 1 monocle is completely comprised of Joe Pantoliano, and all his great yelling that has been consistent. His voice sounds a little bit more scruffier in this one because he's older, but he sounds just as loud as he did from day one back in 1995 all the way through to 2019. So I got to give it to Joe Pantoliano.
He's great.
He's great. Love him. So 1 monocle out of 5. That's where I stand. And mind you, this is just the mindset of like franchises and bringing it together and recognizing, you know what, people, we got to know where our money goes. You know, just know what you're investing into when it comes to these movies. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on all of our social platforms, such as facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and on Instagram at Filmlosophy101. Another quick thing we wanted to throw out there and let you guys know, if you're in the Sacramento area, we are doing another trivia night.
It's a back.
Why did you sound like an Italian? Like, it's a back.
I didn't say it's a back.
It's back. We got a trivia night coming down February 10th at Oblivion Comics and Coffee in downtown. We'll be posting the invite on our Facebook page, so check it out over there. We're going to be talking about a lot of great stuff. It's going to be somewhat Valentine's Day themed. You're just going to have to wait and see. And see what we got. We'll come out with more information as the weeks come about. But I'm stoked. Spencer's excited.
Yep.
And we're going to be partnering again with Video Game Bang to get out a really great and awesome night with some awesome prizes. So you might want to stick around for that. Right?
I guess.
Well, that's
what... No. It's going to be fun.
It'll be fun. So, like we said, this was a great, awesome conversation. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.